The gorgeous oud strumming of one of the brothers of Le Trio Djoubran, Adnan Djoubran, which is the signal to the beginning of Gaza Corner. And on tonight's Gaza Corner, I'll tell the story of a little ray of sunshine in Syria, but it will come at the end. This year, the war in Syria passed its 10-year anniversary, and the war has slowed down, but the suffering has not. The war is at a stage that is best described as a violent, protracted stalemate. The human suffering, as you are well aware, has been unimaginable. Almost 600,000 Syrians are dead and missing. And to put that in the context, the population in Syria right before the war, say in the beginning of 2011, was about 21 million, 600,000 of 21 million dead or missing. More than 50% of Syrians are either internally displaced or refugees outside the country. And then there are the consequences of war that are less visible. And this includes the destruction of Syria's social fabric and massive, abject poverty widespread throughout the country. Also contributing to the misery are the international sanctions. Also, Turkey suppressing water flow in Syria's Kurdish-controlled northeast, and the worst drought in 70 years, which is devastating for especially northeastern Syria, which was known as the breadbasket. It's where most of Syria's crops are grown. All of this happening amid COVID. Elizabeth Surgoff, who writes extensively on Syria, says, quote, "In all areas, parents are eating less so their children can eat enough. People have given up eating fruits and vegetables, cheese and eggs," unquote. It's no wonder so many Syrians risk their lives every single day to reach Europe by any means necessary. One of the consequences of Syria's extreme poverty and instability is this toxic combination, that I mentioned, which is abject poverty and also instability. And this combination creates a very fertile recruitment condition for extremist groups like the Islamic State. For Syrian families struggling to survive, and as I say, there are many of those, the benefits that armed groups offer child soldiers, and by a child soldier I mean under 18 years old, the benefits can be life-saving. Some parents believe their only option in Syria is to send their children to fight for armed groups. And the Islamic State is notable among them. Fighting for an extremist group is normally far more lucrative than fighting for a moderate one. A 2016 report by the organization international-alert.org, the report is linked at the Tangents playlist. Thank you, Harry. It describes how the collapse of Syria's education system also has greatly contributed to children's vulnerability to join extremist groups. The report is 5 years old, but it still rings true, and I'm going to quote from it. "Vulnerability among young Syrians is being generated by an absence of a means to serve basic human needs. In many instances, violent extremist groups are effectively meeting these needs. The most vulnerable groups are adolescent boys and young men between the ages of 12 and 24, children and young adults who are not in education, internally displaced persons, known as IDPs, and refugees without supportive family structures and networks. And it goes on to say, radicalization is not an explanation for joining a violent extremist group per se. For many young Syrians, belief in extreme ideologies appears to be at most a secondary factor in the initial decision to join an extremist group, unquote. In an article by Amberin Zaman, who is one of the most reliable journalists, at least that I know of, writing on Turkey and Syria and on the Kurds, her article, which is linked at the playlist at tangents.com, the article title is "Kurdish Leaders Say Poverty, Biggest Threat Driving Syrians into Arms of IS or the Islamic State." Amberin interviewed one 24-year-old father of three who was in a military prison, a former Islamic State member. Quoting this former IS member, "I did it for the money because of the drought. My farm collapsed. I had a lot of debts. They are paying people to join them, paying thousands of dollars," unquote. A prison official stated that about 50 jihadis, that's his word, jihadis being held at the prison were captured in 2021, and he said all had joined for money. The U.S. Treasury noted in a recent report that the Islamic State, quote, "probably has tens of millions of U.S. dollars available in cash reserves," unquote. The Islamic State lost its caliphate because of the United States air power teaming up with the tenacity of its ground force allies, known as the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, mostly comprised of Kurds and also of Arabs. But the Islamic State has not gone away. It's been regrouping, and apparently the Islamic State has sleeper cells all over Syria, and they are now attacking more often. The Rojava Information Center, and Rojava is the name for the autonomous region run by the Kurds in northeastern Syria. The Rojava Information Center, which is an independent research organization, claims that Islamic State sleeper cell attacks are on the rise, especially in the Arab-majority region Deir ez-Zor. Al-Monitor reporter Sultan Al-Khanj reports in an article that is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. The article is called "Islamic State Ramps Up Activities in Eastern Syria." And quoting in the article a Syrian journalist by the name of Zayn al-Abadin, who lives in Deir ez-Zor's eastern countryside, he says, quote, he says IS for the Islamic State, IS launches almost daily operations here with explosive devices and attacks against SDF members, patrols, checkpoints, and civilians suspected of cooperating with the SDF. IS also forces the local traders, investors in oil wells, livestock owners, and doctors to pay it a tax, threatening to kill those who fail to pay. IS is also killing anyone practicing witchcraft or suspected of selling drugs, unquote. Deir ez-Zor was a former, not only a former stronghold of the Islamic State, but was the last stronghold of the Islamic State before it was defeated by a combination of the SDF and U.S. forces in 2017. But it's an oil-rich region. And as the reporter just said, Zayn al-Abadin, the Islamic State is in control enough to tax oil traders to help IS to finance itself. The commander-in-chief of the SDF And to my mind, the most important leader in Rojava is Mazlum Kobane, also known as Mazlum Abdi. He's a deft military commander as well as a pretty canny political strategist. He's on decent terms with the United States and Russia. Turkey, on the other hand, would like to see him 6 feet underground. Last November, Amberin Zaman interviewed him, and that interview is linked at the Tangents playlist. And Kobane discussed the correlation between poverty and terrorism. Quoting Kobane, he uses the term Daesh, which is the Arabic acronym for the Islamic State. He says, Daesh is active all across Syria, and these unfavorable economic conditions are impacting our struggle against Daesh. Its ability to regain ground is increasingly linked to economic conditions in Syria. There are way too many unemployed people. There is widespread poverty. All such factors diminish the authority of our administration. Daesh takes advantage of this. Therefore, the international coalition forces and all powers fighting against terrorism must take immediate steps to address the economic situation here. Bolstering the economy has become one of the pillars of combating terrorism. We, as the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, say this openly. If we are to fight Daesh effectively, we need to prioritize the economy. Unquote. At the outset of Gaza Corner, I said there is a ray of sunshine. And at this point, in talking about Syria and the war and the Islamic State, any wonderful development is worth mentioning. And this comes from Amberin Zaman's aforementioned article that is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. Quoting from the article, in 2019, a group of Syrian Kurdish emigres in Germany decided to take matters into their own hands. They raised money between themselves to launch an internet technology company that would employ bright young Syrians and keep them at home. The outfit, the first of its kind, is based in a modern and cheerful office in Amudey and is called the Northeast Syria Technology, or NESTECH, N-E-S-T-E-C-H, NESTECH. It's based in a village in the Rojava region of northeastern Syria. It's run by a young Syrian Kurdish woman. She's fluent in four languages, and she graduated from law school. Amberin Zaman reports that much of NESTECH's equipment was smuggled in from Iraqi Kurdistan. And the equipment was smuggled on the backs of donkeys. As of December 27th, which is the date of the article, NESTECH had 35 young Syrians working for it, and a real ethnic mix. There were Kurds, Sunni Arabs. The Sunni Arabs are from Raqqa in Syria. And also Alawites who work out of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's stronghold in Latakia. The company has recently won several contracts in Rojava, including one to digitize the local municipalities and another to help upgrade the communications infrastructure. One employee, who has a degree in artificial intelligence from Damascus University, His dream is to work in Silicon Valley. I imagine that may be a dream of all of the employees of this company. Meanwhile, his job at NESTECH pays over $500 per month, which is a lot in Syria. For example, the article points out a professor earns one-tenth that amount per month. So that's my little ray of sunshine, how young people are so resourceful to be able to put this high-tech company together in Rojava and employ people also in Raqqa and also in Latakia.